You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. We are The Real Short Box. My name is Donald. I'm here with Kevin, and we will be talking about some vicious comic deaths while we play racquetball.
Gotcha.
Aw, you ain't gonna win.
Yeah.
Ah, damn it. All right, let's get to it. Whew. Okay. Oh, man, I'm a little... Always get this way after we play racquetball, Kevin. And I'm gonna beat you someday, damn it.
Someday. In your dreams.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk comics, everybody. Let's talk comic books.
And since it's the vicious, horrific month of Halloween in October, we're going to talk about vicious comic book deaths.
Yes. Yep. It did not change. The subject matter did not change. We're going to talk some death. Kevin, I know you're chomping at the bit. You've got a really good one. Let's just jump right into it, dude.
Yes. One that came to my mind immediately is Walking Dead issue 100. A very shocking and brutal death. And that is a poor Glenn. Man, that poor guy went out, did not go out right.
No, not at all.
I mean, when I saw that and read that issue for the first time, I said, holy moly. Oh my God, poor Glenn. Oh,
first thing I said was, not a good time to lose your head, Glenn.
No. And the other tragic part about it was he just impregnated his girlfriend.
Everyone. Oh, his girl. Okay, got it. I thought he impregnated more.
It's been a while. What's his girlfriend's name?
Oh, hell, I don't remember. Are you kidding me? Sharon.
Was it Sharon?
Cheryl. Charlene. I don't know. I made up all those names. You want some candy? You know, it's Halloween time. Have some candy, Kevin. Candy. Kevin loves it. There's one thing Kevin loves, it's candy.
Well, I do have a sweet tooth. It wasn't Maggie, was it?
Yeah, that's it.
It was Maggie.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you thought of it.
Yes.
Maggie. Yes, so she got to live.
And see the poor man just get his brain smashed in.
Oh, yeah. And if you watch the television version, like, he's going like, yeah, Maggie, yeah. Like that, well, as he's falling and shit.
Well, the comic was kind of the same way, too. I mean, he's just being beaten. He's getting his last words in and just a vicious, brutal beating that he's receiving.
It was pretty brutal. Although I still say to this day that the comic book version of the governor is far worse than the comic book version of Negan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, with both characters, they had to kind of tone it down for television, especially on AMC.
Yeah.
Now, if it was on HBO, I think we could have seen the full glory of all the vicious crimes that were being committed in the comics.
I do like what they did with Negan, though, in the series, to kind of make him like an anti-hero, you know?
Oh, they were? Oh, really?
Yeah. I think that's a cool way to pivot and kind of spin it to where you can see why he went down this road and now follow him back on his way to redemption.
My understanding in the comics, I heard that, because I stopped reading after a certain point, I heard they did get into his origins a little bit, that he had a family of his own, and there was some tragedy that happened to him in the comics as well.
Yep, and that's why he named his baseball bat Lucille.
Lucille, yes.
Yeah, you got it. Okay. Yeah, so that's a tough one.
I mean,
I think if I saw you get your head bashed in with a baseball bat, I would be pretty upset. I feel like...
Be pretty sad.
Yeah, I would immediately throw you into the nearest dumpster just to get rid of the body, of course.
Right.
You know, James Bond the shit out of you.
Yeah, in other words. I get it, but you give me the quantum of solace treatment.
Right, yes. Gotcha. I will quantum of solace you. But I have to take your wallet first before I dump you in, right?
Absolutely. Get the wallet. Get any pertinent information in the wallet.
And money,
of course. Credit cards, all
that
stuff.
Take the watch off of
you. Take the watch off. Jewelry, whatever the case may be.
I know you love your gold. If there's one thing everybody knows about Kevin, he loves his gold chains.
Oh, yeah,
gold chains. So I'll take all of those.
Take all the gold chains.
Yeah, that giant cross. Or was it the watch that you wear? I can't remember which.
The platinum, you know, the platinum coin I keep in the wallet. You know, all that stuff.
Yeah. The Bling King.
There you go.
That's what they called you.
That's who I am. I'm the Bling King.
Yeah, back in school, back in college.
part of the Bling Gang.
Yeah, the Bling Gang. Or the Blame Game, whatever.
But it's a very powerful issue. It's probably one of the best issues in from that decade in comics when that incident occurred.
That's true. Mine's a little earlier, the one I want to talk about. Mine actually occurred in 2000 and, well, maybe it's not that much earlier, but it's still a little bit earlier, 2009.
Yeah.
Yep. Series called Ultimatum. Marvel's Ultimate Universe.
Jeff Loeb wrote that, right?
Yes, Jeff Loeb did write that. Unfortunately, he was, I believe, his son passed at a very young age. I think he was 17.
17, yeah. And he passed away from bone cancer, from what I read, unfortunately.
And when he passed, Loeb's writing kind of took a turn. And to say that this is one of the darkest things Marvel Comics has done is a bit of an understatement. Just one of the things in my head automatically that you can just hear when I say it is when Hank Pym, who's in love with Janet Van Dyne, the Wasp, of course, same in the Marvel Ultimate Universe, he stumbles across the Blob eating her. She's full size, and he's just eating the insides of her, like raw.
I
don't understand. I think that's why, you know, people are like, this is dark just to be dark, because it is, because the Blob never really ate people. He wasn't a cannibal or anything. Right. So they made him really dark. And so what does Hank do in retaliation? He grabs the Blob up because he's in giant form and he bites his head off.
Mm. Wow.
I mean, just bites it in the way the artist shows it. It's just you know how visceral. Like the muscular strands, like the stringiness of the snap.
Visceral.
Right. When he just crunches on that thing and then just bites his head right off.
You know what kind of reminds me of? Have you ever seen Attack on Titans?
Yes. Yeah.
They kind of do stuff like that. When they grab people and they're eating them, they do exactly that.
That's true. And the giants in that, they're just...
The Titans, yeah. The Titans,
they're just muscle. There's no skin, right?
No. Some of them have skin. You know, it depends. Some do, some don't. Some do have, like, you know...
I don't understand that. I never watched it or caught up enough to know.
What the origins of all these... creatures are these titans.
But
I
saw they made a live action film of it.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I don't know if it's good.
You know what's funny? Not funny. In real life, that was always kind of like a nightmare of mine, actually, interesting. Like, if you dream about it, like these really giant people that are just cannibals, they just want to grab you and eat you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a scary thing.
That is truly, truly horrifying.
Sir. Oh, yeah. Can you imagine that? Like a 50-foot tall giant that's just gets off on eating regular humans. That's scary. There's nothing you can do about it. You'd be hiding just like they do in that cartoon.
They could come in at any time right now. I mean, I'm looking up.
Rip off.
They could just pull off a big chunk of the ceiling.
Grab us and that's the end of us.
Or just punch their fist through it.
Yep, and that's the end of us.
It'd just be like us punching through cellophane, you know?
Yep. Basically, we would know what it's like to basically be an insect and getting crushed. That's basically what it'd be like.
Mm-hmm.
Or fish, you know, they're going fishing, you know, get the fish and eat them.
I wonder if like insects have like a act of God like in their world. I feel like, oh well, it was God's will, you know, when it was actually us just crushing it with our hands or something.
So in other words, if you go like to an ant mound where they're chilling right now and all of a sudden a big foot comes down and kills like 100 of them, and like
some of them are like, why, this is a tragedy, and then others are like, oh well, it's God's plan, you know, or whatever their God is, I guess.
Well, in many respects, they probably don't even...
Oh, maybe they go, it's the queen's plan.
The queen's plan.
It's the queen's plan, everybody.
So like bees are the same way, you're in a beehive and all of a sudden...
Yeah, but they say it differently. It's like queen's plan or something like that. I don't know. I got nothing.
Our fate.
Yeah. Yep, it's fate. Okay, so that happened. Now we're going to double down on this one. Because also in the same series, Kevin, in the same series, yes, Dr. Doom is a piece of shit, right?
Yeah, kind of.
So what happens is like the things like we have to stop Dr. Doom at all costs. So he just runs up to him, grabs him in his hand, his head in his hand, in his large hand, and crushes it like a
and somehow it penetrated melon. Doom's metal armor.
Just crushed his skull. I mean, completely.
That's crazy.
He's got blood all over his hands, and it's like...
Yeah, see the picture there.
You had to pay for what you did.
Wow. Now, as we know, in the regular timeline, Doom would be well prepared for such a possibility.
Yep. It's because, like, Doom murdered the Scarlet Witch, which sparked Magneto's crazy rage, which caused the flooding of New York which like drowned like half the heroes and half the population.
Mm.
And so it was kind of an insane moment.
Well, by it, well, at least, you know, M-Day didn't happen.
I mean, Magneto's done some fucked up shit. I mean, he pulled the adamantium out of Wolverine, for Christ's sake.
That's true.
Wasn't that Wolverine 75 back in the day?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was Wolverine 75 back in the 90s.
No, I'm sorry. It was X-Men 25.
Yep, you're right. X-Men 25. Five. And yes. 75 just kind of
continued
that. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yep, it's a famous cover. You know, you see Magneto's about to do something to Wolverine, but not exactly sure what it is.
Right. That was epic. Crazy.
And it makes sense. I mean, that's realistic. He could do that.
Yeah.
If he got full, you know.
He's strong enough, he'd pull that shit right out of you.
Yep.
Right out of you, motherfucker.
Yep.
Yep. Crazy. Okay. So, we've talked about, so far with yours,
Glenn.
We've talked about Glenn getting his ass kicked and his head beat in. We've talked about... the ultimatum. We've talked about Giant Man chewing off the Blob's head. We've talked about Thing smashing Dr. Doom's head.
Yeah.
So speaking you up the ante, so to speak? Can you go higher?
Speaking of Magneto, one of my favorite villains went against another one of my favorite villains from the X-Men comic books, Magneto. Magneto and Apocalypse, they're in the Age of Apocalypse storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Great storyline, probably one of the only good storylines from the 1990s from Marvel.
Yeah, probably.
And very interesting, as you know, Charles Xavier dies early before he has a chance to form the X-Men, thanks to his son going back in time and accidentally killing him. He meant to kill Magneto, but Xavier got in the way and took the death blow. So Magneto forms the X-Men in his honor. But unfortunately, I guess the way he operated things, it just wasn't the same way Charles would have done things. And it gave the ability of Apocalypse to actually conquer the world in the absence of there being no more Charles Xavier. So the X-Men team has some interesting people on it. Obviously, Magneto is the leader. Cyclops is not on that X-Men team. Instead, he's working for Apocalypse on a team called Factor X, led by Mr. Sinister. And one of my favorite characters that came from the Age of Apocalypse, Dark Beast.
Ah, Dark Beast.
An evil Hank McCoy. It was awesome. Great to see Hank McCoy going the other direction. A mad scientist. Awesome. And I was so glad they carried him over into the regular Marvel timeline at one point, along with a couple other characters. But
yeah, when they brought him over into the real Marvel universe, I was like, oh, man. Because they like had so many cool characters that I was really hoping like some of the other ones would have made it over, and they didn't.
Well, Dark Beast made it over. The Sugar Man, I didn't care for so much. I don't know why they brought him over.
No clue.
Nate Gray, I understood why they brought him over.
Kind of didn't need that.
And then who was the fourth person? Ah, Holocaust. I remember him. And then he kind of disappeared after he fought Exodus. But he's kind of an interesting character. But Dark Beast, I thought, was one of the best new characters or whatever, modified characters that was created during that timeline. But in any case, Apocalypse, of course, has his minions, and Magneto has his... Right.
I am Apocalypse.
Yes.
I have gone into the beginning of time, and I have seen you form from the primordial ooze.
Yes.
I am all. I was born of this earth and will die of the planet when it explodes in my arms.
With the help of celestial technology, of course.
Yeah. It's like, okay, Apocalypse, we get it. He's great at parties.
Of course.
Yeah.
Thousands of years old. But what's cool about the storyline is, you know, Bishop, of course, is the only person who's aware of the true timeline. And so when he contacts these alternate versions of the X-Men, they tell him what's up. They help him. He gets to get the Emkron crystal, all that good stuff. But in the final battle, Apocalypse and Magneto throw down in the most vicious way possible. Magneto, who's technically not as powerful as he is in the regular timeline, somehow summons up the last of his energy. He dug as deep as he could in his magnetic powers and surged and blew Apocalypse in half, tore him in half. It was just incredible.
That's insane.
Incredible. I was like, oh my God. Remember when I first read this for the first time, I said, wow, did Magneto just do that to Apocalypse?
Yeah.
I was like, did he really just do that?
He
sure did. But it goes to show you the power of the Master of Magnetism when he's at full capacity.
Mm-hmm. He can take Superman.
Well, we had that conversation 5 years ago. We had that Superhero Smackdown, which, by the way, which is on, you know, in the archives of Rumble Spoon Productions and The Real Short Box.
Yep. You can find it easily. The most easiest on our website, rumblespoon.com, or on YouTube. That's where you can find them the most easiest.
Absolutely. And by the way, there's a couple other controversial matches we have there. One that I'm glad you and Jared at the time agreed with, and that was Swamp Thing versus the Incredible Hulk, where I said Swamp Thing would win, and people got mad at me. Kevin, there's no way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you had somebody threaten you in the parking lot at a Trader Joe's, I think.
Yeah. I said, look, man, I love the Hulk, but Swamp Thing is like practically a freaking entity of... There's nothing you can do. You know, Swamp Thing is just so ridiculously powerful. And that's the thing with... That's another story for a different day. A lot of these DC characters are just freaking overpowered. But anyway.
Too powerful for their own good.
Too powerful for their own good.
Yeah, it is what it is. What are you going
to
do?
But getting back to this, Apocalypse, Magneto, if you have a chance, if you haven't read it yet, read X-Men Omega. That's where this battle takes place, the final issue of that particular Age of Apocalypse storyline. It's a fun read and a fun visual.
You know, speaking of fun visuals, I just want to talk about when you come home and you're like, where's my dinner? You know, you've had a long day. You're a bit snackish, a bit hungry. And you go to the fridge and you... go to open the door, but instead of there being dinner or, you know, food for dinner that you can prepare, it's just your girlfriend dead inside.
You don't mean that metaphorically, do you?
No, I mean, like, well, literally, like, stuffed inside the fridge.
Now, how is that possible? How do you stuff a body inside a refrigerator?
Well, Major Force figured it out back in 1994 in Green Lantern, Volume 3, Number 54.
That's mean.
Yeah, it was Ron Mars that wrote it, and I know at one point we talked about it, but it bears repeating with the severity of this one, where it was so horrific and such a trope, a device for this woman to spur, like, the anger of this character, of Green Lantern, of Kyle Rayner, to go after Major Force, who had done this to his girlfriend. That they coined the term of this trope, women in refrigerators. And that was back in 99 that Gail Simone coined it. And they have a website, I believe, that you can go check it out.
Women in refrigerators.
Yeah, women in refrigerators, yes.
Jeez.
I went there originally thinking it would be something like kind of saucy. You know, you get to see scantily clad women inside refrigerators. Two of my favorite things. And unfortunately... it's not, it's, there's like a thing you sign and stuff, and it's very serious, Kevin. So don't go there expecting any fun.
Nope. I don't think I want to visit that website anyway.
No fun. I actually went to, Long Beach and, Comic-Con here recently and brought that issue to Ron Mars to sign it.
And he did?
He did. Yeah.
Was CGC there or CBCS there to witness it?
No, I can always get it CBCS later. But I thought it was a seminal issue, you know. I love issues that have to deal with history, whether it's controversial or straightforward or, you know, whatever. I enjoy that. So that was a must for me. And to get him to sign it was just a cherry on the top.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ron Mars was basically the predecessor to Jeff Johns before he took over the Green Lantern series.
It's true. Yeah, it was Ron Mars and then Jeff Johns. And same thing, it was Mark Waid for the longest time. And then I think a couple other people took over the Flash for like a second. And then I believe it was Johns again, wasn't it?
Yeah, he did some work on Flash for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, he did a pretty long stint, I believe, on the Flash.
Yeah, because Green Lantern, he was there for almost a decade.
Yeah, they're a long, long time. It was one of the few, or if only book, if I recall, might have been one of a few that survived the New 52.
Yep. That one and Batman to a lesser extent. But those are the two that kind of like they didn't make too many changes.
Interestingly enough, yeah. Like imagine you have enough clout in your titles to go doing so well that they're like,
we're not messing with it.
We're not messing with that. We'll just change everything around it.
The ones that they did mess with that pissed us off, especially me, was Tony Bedard's Rebels that wasn't finished properly.
No.
Because of New 52.
Yeah, they canceled it and never went back to it.
But he was nice at Comic-Con when we met him. He told me what was like the plans he had. Had they continued.
They should let him do it. Like, bring it back and do it right. Yeah. Rebels is
awesome.
Is basically, it's like a science police team that had left because they were accused of committing crimes they did not. So it's like the A-team of space. And they're on the run. The father is on the run from his newborn infant son, who is...
Feral Dox.
Yes. Just just has it out for his dear old dad. He wants to kill his dad, even though he's an infant, a toddler. He can barely lift his own damn head.
It's Brainiac 2, technically, right?
Yeah. But he's so smart, he just wants him dead. Like, yeah.
And Brainiac 3 is even smarter. It's kind of funny, because like his father is Brainiac, his son's Brainiac 3. They both just don't like him, or want to kill him, or just don't want to be around him.
Right. Every Brainiac, I guess, wants to kill the other Brainiac, except for the one good Brainiac.
Right.
Who's stuck in the middle.
Yeah, he's stuck in the middle.
Go figure.
My father and my son hate me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So let's see. Do you have any other ones that you want to talk about?
Yeah, Amazing Spider-Man. Well, two for one here. Amazing Spider-Man 121 and 122. Basically, the first one's the death of Gwen Stacy.
Oh, okay.
That's a very famous and infamous death, especially the way it goes down. Technically, is a Green Goblin killer, or did Spider-Man accidentally kill her? You know, he throws her off the Brooklyn Bridge. Spidey, you know, webs her, but it looks like the momentum might have caused her to break her neck.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you know, we know how that goes down. And then the following issue, obviously, another final confrontation at the time between Norman and Peter, ends up with Norman getting impaled on his glider.
Oh.
And that's a bad way
to go. That's right, because they did that in the movie.
Exactly, yeah. They did that in the movie. By the way, that's a bad way to go, getting impaled.
Is it? Have you known people that have been impaled, and have they told you how painful it is?
No, because they didn't live for much longer if they did get impaled.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fair.
I mean, think of Vlad the Impaler and how he impaled his victims. That's a bad way to go. First, it goes through your, private area, your anus, basically, and then goes all the way up and...
Up through your mouth?
In some cases, yes.
Oh, my God.
Very, very, very bad way to die. And then here's the worst part. A lot of people don't die immediately.
No.
Some people, they're just bleeding out and just...
They did say...
And going to shock
later. I remember this. I was watching Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead.
Is to get impaled?
I think that was the name of the movie. And it had Matt Dillon and Christopher Lloyd, I believe. And I can't remember who else. I can't remember the lead. Andy Garcia, I think.
Okay.
And he was being hunted down, like, by a dude that wants him dead, by a mob dude, a hitman. And they were talking about how this particular hitman would shoot you through the asshole because it's the most painful way to die because it's the slowest way to die.
That's terrible. Oof. Ouch. You know what? That does kind of make sense. You know, if you sit the wrong way and you hit your tailbone, how painful it is. Matter of fact, you make a very good point because I've talked to people. I knew of someone. Who was it? Years ago, they broke their tailbone.
Jesus. The coccyx?
Yeah. They broke their tailbone, and they explained to me, you know, how it takes a long time to heal and how uncomfortable it is just sitting as regular people would sit. And this explained to me the process, how painful it is, how difficult it is just to get through it.
Whew.
So when I thought, when you think about it, it makes sense. Things you take for granted.
Yeah.
Just simply sitting down. Imagine that just every time you do that, it's just a painful experience. And you have to position yourself in such a way to make it less painful.
Nope.
Yeah. But broken tailbone. Yeah. And then someone shooting you there. Yeah. That would be a painful way to go.
That'd be very painful.
Or think of people who suffer from hemorrhoids. I hear how painful that is.
That's true. Hemorrhoids. Yeah. Those can be pretty painful, I'm sure. Particularly if they're the outies instead of the innies.
Yes.
Ooh. Because it's like vein pictures. Nerve.
I've seen the pictures, and boy, that freaks me out.
Okay, people listening that right now, don't
bring pictures.
Outside hemorroids or just hemorrhoids in
general. External hemorrhoids.
Thank you. External hemorrhoids. Yeah, don't Google that.
You won't be sleeping well, put it that
no,
way.
No. It's kind of like a blue waffle, I'm going to say.
I've heard that website.
But on the other side, so I would not be a part of that. Nope. So yeah, that's pretty vicious way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to talk about my boy, Ted Kord. By the way, I don't know if you know this, Kevin, but I created a web series called The Blue Beetle Ted Kord Returns. It's on YouTube.
It's used to be.
Check it out under Rubble Spring Productions now. We have a whole playlist, so you can watch the entire thing from beginning to end. I will say, on the record, the first season was our roughest because we had the least amount of money. We had to prove that we could do it. Once we did it, we got some people that invested, and we were able to get a higher quality picture. So everything improves season after season. I think fourth seasons are best. There's a lot of fun in that one. We have a soundless episode of Black and White. monster movie episode. We have a musical. And then we have the finale in season 4. It's just fantastic. So highly recommend if you can check that out. But anyway, I digress. Let's get to Infinite Crisis.
Countdown
to Infinite Crisis. Thank you. Number 0, if I recall. Number 1, maybe. But it was the countdown. That one had the death of Mr. Ted Kord, a.k.a. the Blue Beetle, by his close friend, Maxwell Lord, who shot him in the head.
And why would he do such a thing?
And that doesn't sound too gruesome, but I guess the fact that he was like one of his closest friends, and to betray him like that and shoot him in the head when he's on his knees, you know, kind of like, no, don't do this. You know, we can figure things out. And he's like, no, I've gone too far, you know.
Why did he just shoot him in the head for? What was Maxwell Lord's problem?
Because he found out. Ted Kord was the smartest one out of everybody in DC Comics at the time. He figured out that Maxwell Lord was behind the satellites and the OMAC project and everything.
Okay.
He figured out that he was using Checkmate for nefarious deeds.
Mm.
So Max had to end him before
the word got out.
Right. But what happened was his death spurred the whole investigation then instead, because he had already gone to people, particularly Wonder Woman, Diana Prince, who had talked to Ted and said, no, she couldn't at the time. She was too busy, but she believed him. She was one of the few that did believe him. And unfortunately, she did not get there in time and he was dead. Mm-hmm. And so she started to poke around. And then we got the whole series going. And it's crazy. But that's probably the onsetting altercation that took place that was kind of very vicious and quick and just kind of brutal.
Well, obviously getting shot in the head is not going to be pretty, so.
No. A lot of brain matter.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of spurting. Mm-hmm. A lot of chunks of skull. Mm-hmm. Skull cap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
Not good at all.
All right, one more quick one, and we're going to wrap this one up, I think.
Real quick, Amazing Spider-Man number 361, 362, and 363. Basically, those first appearances of Carnage in full glory. Vicious glory. Carnage was just killing people brutally.
Mm.
Projectiles.
No.
You know, symbiote hammers, you know, axes.
Axes was my favorite. He'd slice people up. And dice, baby.
I remember when I read that as like a 13-year-old, I'm like, wow, what's with this guy?
And you were like, wow, why do I have a boner?
Of course.
You vicious sumbitch.
I mean, it was just brutal. I mean, people were just paying the ultimate price. I mean, because he's just crazy. He's basically, and you said it best, you and Jared said it best years ago. He's basically, in some respects, the Joker of Marvel. He's just.
Yeah. He's most unpredictable.
He's unpredictable. There's no logic to him. He just does what he does. Cletus Cassidy is just out of
his mind. Pure carnage, yeah.
It's pure carnage.
It was a perfect name and a perfect character, yep. Honestly. Great creation. One more real quick before we go. Crisis on Infinite Earths. I believe it's issue 8, I want to say. It was the death of Spider-Man. Or not Spider-Man. Jesus Christ. The death of Flash, Barry Allen.
Mm.
And
issue.
Yeah. It was right, if I recall, it was right after the Supergirl died.
Yep.
And then the Flash basically attempted to save the day and ran himself to death. Kind of crazy.
That. Run yourself to, and plus you see him age too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nuts to see all that take place, to see that happen. But it did. And speaking of happening, we do a live podcast pretty much every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can check us out. We do a lot of free giveaways, fun question and answer sessions, rankings, voting sessions where the audience phones in their vote. It's really cool. We also have our audio podcast. Comes out about every Thursday. It is on all the major platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, you name it. We're on it. And we do have a few sponsors. You can check out Splattered Frog. .com. It's a brewing company, and they do have a bunch of really cool hats and merch and stuff and glasses and things that you can purchase. If you type in the coupon code SHORTBOX, you get 20% off your order. And if you go to HaffsHotSauce.com, HaffsHotSauce.com, and type in the coupon code Donald Hiccups, all one word, you get 10% off your order, and they have a wonderful collection of hot sauces. With that, my name is Donald.
My name is Kevin.
And if we don't see you out and about anytime soon, perhaps we'll see you
at sometimes the decapitating and brutal comic book shop.
You want to go back out for another session?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
All right. See you guys.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.